You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello, welcome to Building the Game, the documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 4th, 2016, episode 188. My name is Josiah. I'm here with Jason and Rob.
All right. Thanks, Josiah. It's so nice to have you here. Are you having a good day?
Yeah.
Did you have a good Christmas?
Yeah.
That's great. I'm so happy to hear that. What was your favorite toy?
I like the Thomas Ball best.
Thomas Ball?
Yep, you got an inflatable Thomas Ball, didn't you, buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thomas is one of your favorites, right?
Yeah, I just don't like Diesel 10.
You don't like Diesel 10?
Yeah.
I don't know what Diesel 10 is.
He's a naughty train.
He's a naughty train?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's a diesel.
He's a diesel instead of an electric?
No, but he has the cloth that tried to snap trains.
Oh, okay.
Snap stuff.
Okay.
Hey, buddy, can we talk about games for a minute?
Yeah.
Did we, we played Loop and Chewy recently. Did you like that game?
Yeah, but there I try to win, but you still win, and Mommy still win.
Yeah, but you won a couple games, right?
Yeah.
Were you knocking the stormtroopers down?
Yeah. But the first time that I knocked two of them down, I was still winning.
Wow. So do you want to knock them down, or do you not want to knock them down?
No, because then you won't win Loop and Chewy.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you want to knock down other people's stormtroopers, but you don't want to knock down your own stormtroopers. So that's the idea, is you tap your
and
paddle.
And the first time, everyone was not winning. All of them were falling.
Yeah, because we didn't know what we were doing. We were really bad at it, weren't we?
Yeah, and all the stormtroopers fall down.
Yep, they did.
That's so too bad. Those poor stormtroopers.
Buddy, do you want to do you want to say anything to all the people out there listening to you?
Yeah.
What do you want to tell them?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, all Josiah. Right. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Because you're welcome, friends. You have good toys.
Yeah.
All good right, presents. Let's end by having you sing your new version of our theme song. So can you sing your version of the Building the Game song?
I don't know.
The one you were singing a minute ago. How's it go?
Building a game with Robin. It's building a game with Jason and Robin Josiah. Every day we'll talk game outside your wrinkle kill. Building the game, yeah. Building the game. Aim.
Yeah, all good right, job, all right.
Why is that all right, buddy, still moving?
Because that's what your voice looks like.
Here, buddy, can we get down now? We got to go see Mom, okay? Do you want to take your trucks upstairs?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, thank Josiah.
You, I just helped you.
You sure did. You're a good helper, buddy.
So
it's super fun.
180 episodes, people can deal with it.
Yeah, 188 episodes, yeah. They can deal with it. That's how you hear the builders, you can deal with it.
So, yeah. All right.
Yeah, hi.
So, hi. We did play Loop and Chewy, though, and it is a kid's game. It's very much a kid's game based on Loop and Louie, which
I never played that.
Has talked about quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
A lot of people have... Well, I remember on Big Star Wars Day when all the toys were released, everyone bought Loop and Chewy, and everyone was talking about it on Twitter.
And I bought it a couple weeks after that because anytime we can get the kids games for stuff, I really try to do that. So
yeah.
And that one's actually a good hand-eye coordination thing because you're supposed to time the taps, as Chewy flies around, because the idea is he's coming towards your stormtroopers. He's on like an electronic swivel, and as he swings down, you want to tap, and it's just a lever, right? And it just pops him up in the air so that he misses your stormtroopers and theoretically hits other people. So,
oh, I see.
And if you time it right, you can actually get him to fly up and dive bomb other people, and they can't block it.
Oh, cool.
He'll just fall right on top of their stormtroopers.
That's cool.
It's well designed.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
right on.
And that was a good... it was kind of a good port, right, to turn it into a licensed product.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. Yeah. Chewy flying the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's interesting. So you're a bad guy in that game.
Yeah, yeah. You actually are like on the Death Star because the Death Star is the center pivot point. And so you're saving your people like from the Death Star. Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, from Chewie. Yeah, I know. It's kind of interesting,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because I kind of thought too, you'd be Chewie like trying to do something good, but no. Well,
yeah, that was my expectation.
You are the villains.
You are the villains. You're the Empire. You're the stormtroopers. You're some kind of commander.
Yes.
Who wants his troops to be the last one standing.
Maybe you're General Veers.
Yeah. So. Yeah, very likely. Well, I think you'd each have to be your own general name.
Right.
Yeah. Was Veers the commander of the Death Star?
He might have been.
I don't know. Tarkin. Well, first Death Star was Grand Moff Tarkin.
Right.
Yeah.
General Veers, I don't know if he was a commander. He was someone, though.
He was somebody.
The only reason I know that for sure is I've been playing this Star Wars battle game on the iPhone that's free, that's really fun.
Yeah.
And General Veers is one of the characters in it. Okay. And he's got the old school outfit on, right?
Yeah.
So
okay.
General Hux, nowhere to be found. So. Oh,
huh. Well, only the new one, though.
He was too emo.
Yeah.
So. Have you seen the Twitter account, the Kylo Ren fake Twitter account?
Yeah, right.
And he's like always talking about Hux and stuff. It cracks me up.
Yeah.
I guess we're talking again. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, so we are now recording in a post The Force Awakens world.
Yes,
and
we've both seen it
both
once.
Seen it.
Yep,
yeah, once each. You're going to go see it a second time.
I was supposed to go see it last night, but then we had an ice storm.
Right,
so we're going to go tomorrow.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, pretty excited.
Yeah, so I guess we should not talk too much about it here.
No,
because we don't want to give
no spoilers at all. So. Just to say that it was really fun.
Yeah, it was good.
A lot of fun.
It was good.
Certainly the best Star Wars movie since the originals, but you know, by far,
yeah, that's not a high bar to
right.
pass.
I think it's safe to say, whether or not you have critiques, the Disney and company, they get it. They get what a Star Wars movie is.
Yeah.
And they worked really hard to make a Star Wars movie. That said, on IO9, they had like 12 plot points that were dropped from the movie.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, they were terrible.
Good thing they were
really bad. Like,
I didn't read that.
Yeah, they wanted to have a character who had, and I don't even know what character this would have been, having seen the movie, but they wanted to have a character that had double-bladed lightsaber where one side was red and one side was blue because it's like fire and ice.
All right.
Like,
yeah.
What? Well, actually, it's like plasma, right?
Yeah. There are often really good reasons why things get cut from movie scripts.
Right. And that was the least ridiculous one.
Was it really?
Yes.
Okay, maybe I'll look for that article.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is good. It's good. It's fun. It's a new Star Wars movie. You know, I could nitpick the crap out of it if I wanted to.
Of course, yeah.
But I'm choosing not to because it's whatever. It was good.
It was good,
fun.
Yeah.
It was good. It was fun.
It was better than I think we both expected.
Yeah, I think so.
I went into it trying to be positive, but I was actually really nervous that it was just going to be bad.
Yeah, and we actually had a pretty rough experience at the theater. We went to the local Alamo Draft House, and this is the second time we've been there now where we had just terrible service. Just the worst service, and our food showed up before our drinks. And it was just really just bad, and the server was a real jerk to us, and our drinks didn't show up, and so we complained to him in the middle of the movie, and then our drinks showed up, and then we got more drinks because he put in a second request or second order because the first ones never showed up. So we got a couple of free drinks.
Then
he came back and said, "You better be thankful for what I just gave you because I took those second drinks off your bill." And I'm like, "What a jerk!" So
see, that's cool though, because a waiter can be as big of a jerk as they want because in the end, you determine how much money they get.
Yeah. Well, and he was coming back just basically to say, I'm giving you free drinks, so you better not stiff me on a tip, right? That was basically what he was saying, which is a great way to get a good tip, right? I mean, I don't tip less than 20% unless the waiter is a real
a-hole. They have to be really bad. Yeah, they
really
have to be really bad.
Right?
And then I will, like, because, but I still feel guilty because I'm like, this is what makes me feel bad about it is because they don't know they're being such a jerk.
Yeah.
Presumably, right?
Yeah.
Because most people who are being a super jerk aren't aware of themselves as that, right? So like I'm always afraid they're going to think that I'm the jerk, but it's like, I know that you're the jerk.
Yeah.
So
also I'm the customer. And so if I'm a little bit of a jerk, oh, well.
Right.
Too bad, you know?
Now, if I'm a jerk and I tip bad, that's not cool.
No, that's not cool. No. Yeah, I mean, no, but at any rate, I bring that up to say that despite the bad service and the server being a jerk, the movie's still shown through. We still really enjoyed it. So, yeah. So, that was a good time.
I'm reminded of when you're, like, talking about servers. You're like, all these customers are jerks. And it reminds me of a saying that I heard once, which was, if you meet an a-hole in the morning, mm-hmm. you met an a-hole. But if you meet a-holes all day, you're the a-hole. Yeah. So, yeah. That was the edited version.
Yeah. Right. Good.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Christmas break has passed us by. Did you play any good games over Christmas break other than Loop and Chewy?
We played a ton of stuff.
Yeah, like what?
We got to play Walk on Fire again.
Oh, yeah.
Playing it again, for sure, reiterated to me that I feel validated about saying that's the game I'm most anticipating for next year.
Good.
It's fun, and I played it with my mom and my wife, and they both thought it was silly, you know, because you're flipping stuff with the spatulas and yeah, and it took us a little while to kind of get used to that. Like, that's the hardest part is, but once you get used to it, it becomes so easy and you can get really good at it. Yeah. And that was in the course of one game where we were like, I can't flip stuff, to like, watch this, you know. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
So the game is really fun. We played Flip City some more, my mom and I did, and she really likes that game, and I'm a big fan as well. I love the design on that, the graphic design even. MacIver did that. So,
okay.
And it's just, it's really good. It's very tight. It's all, he's so good at just making it all flow together.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of like, it just fits, you know?
Yeah.
I really like that. What else do we play? Oh, we played Quiddler, which is a word card game where you've got,
I've heard of that.
Cards,
yeah,
and you're trying to, you've got letter cards. Sometimes there are more than one letter and you're trying to make words, and I destroyed the other two players. Says I'm pretty good with word games. Then there was just some luck. I mean, you know, getting dealt like Steph like drops a QU. She's like, oh gosh. She gives her this QU and it's like the exact letter I need to make quiz.
Like, nice.
Which is a huge word because of the Z as well.
Right.
And it just, I mean, there is obviously a lot of luck to that.
Mm-hmm.
But what else? I played some other stuff too, but I don't remember what it all was. I feel like there was one other game we played. Maybe not, but in any event, had a great time playing games. So we've been trying really hard to play more games again. Mm-hmm. And because I've missed playing games, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, good.
You play any stuff?
Yeah, we went to the in-laws' house for Christmas Day and spent some time with Christine's sisters and their boyfriends and her folks. And we played Cards Against Humanity because they really wanted to.
And because you probably demanded that game. You were like, listen, guys, I don't care what else we do, we're playing Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, we at least played it with a bunch of the expansions that Christine and I have bought in the past. So a lot of the cards were, well, I mean, I've seen them all now, so they were still not terribly funny to me, but they were funny to everyone else, and, you know, and they enjoyed it. But even still, by the end of that game, everyone was kind of done, and they was kind of all agreed upon that, you know, and in fact, I think somebody else even said what I've said before, that, you know, this game is fun the first time, and then when you start getting back cards you already know, it's not as fun,
right?
But it's still fun to introduce to other people until you've seen all those same cards a dozen times, and then it's not fun anymore.
Right.
So they all kind of remembered that while playing it, so that was okay. But then we played Finish It. The outrageous storytelling party game.
Whoa.
It was a big hit.
Good.
Yeah, it went really, really well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, that's a game that sometimes, storytelling games, right? Sometimes it's tough to get people to come out of the shell a little bit and feel comfortable just making something up on the spot.
Right.
And I think it's a good thing that Finish It does, is it gives you, it if you're the leader of a round where you have to make up the first half of a story, it gives you a guideline, you know, a specific framework in which you need to build the story, so you're not just flailing around, and then gives a specific goal to the other people who are going to finish the story,
right?
You know, and I think it's good about giving good direction in a storytelling game,
and the tools that they have that they have to use too. Yeah. Gives them something to throw in, which for people who are good at telling stories can actually be a hindrance sometimes.
Sure.
You're like, oh gosh, but if you're not, it's a crutch, right?
Right.
And if you have something really not great, like a not great combo, which doesn't happen that often in that game because everything's funny, but sometimes, right, you're going to get
sure,
changed.
Sure, it's going
to
Of course, I see a bad combo as a great opportunity, personally, but...
Right. Yeah. But actually, what I mean when I say a bad combo is a boring combo.
Sure.
I want to be in the ocean with a riding lawnmower.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's funny to me.
That's funny. And we actually had that come up.
That's not the first time that one's come up, which I love.
Yeah. Yeah, but so that went really well. We played with seven, and that's the second time I've played with seven, and I do think seven is kind of the limit for players. If time, really just time wise.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, because if you want, did you guys play a whole way around?
Yeah, we're all seven people led around.
Wow.
And that's, and that goes through all the item cards. And, it, you know, every item card has two things on it. So you could reshuffle and keep going.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it just, I think just time wise, that's too much.
Yeah. I really like it with like four or five. I think that's a good solid number.
I think five is kind of ideal.
The sweet spot, yeah.
Yeah. Three to five is a really good range for that game.
Right. Because listening to four stories every time is not bad, but listening to six stories every time is a lot.
It is a lot, right?
So, not, it's still, as long as you've got mostly good people, it's, I think it's fine, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and if you want to spend more time playing it, hey, play with seven or more. That's totally cool. But yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, and then, last night, we play tested Smithereens. Christina.
Smithereens!
Yeah. So the new version of that. And it went really well.
Wow.
It went really well. I mean, there's still...
Miracles happen, bro.
Yeah. Well, it's, remember, it's basically a whole new game.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Right. That, like...
it's a whole new game. And the first thing that you and I played was Hot Garbage. And
I still enjoyed it, but...
Yeah. And it I've been thinking about it for the better part of the last 6 months, you know?
Right.
And I finally ended up here. And... so it went really well. There were some problems, but clear plans and clear directions on where to go to adjust those problems. I'd like to play with you again sometime.
Yeah, yeah. And I need you to play my shipwreck game as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Different kind of shipwreck.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I feel really good about that. So I feel great, honestly, about that. I think that's definitely going to come with me to Unpub.
That's awesome. That's great. I think it's going to be a really good Unpub game.
I think so.
I think that it's going to fit really well at Unpub. So.
And I think I can get it down to about a 30-minute game, maybe even like 25 minutes.
Yeah, I think that 25 minutes would be a real good spot for that game, personally.
It took us about 40 minutes to play last night, but that was, you know, I mean, that's normal for a first time, you know, for it to be.
Oh, yeah, especially first time with the design, like everyone's playing for the first time, including you. So there's going to be a lot more questions. You're going to have to think about the answers more than if it was just, yeah, I got this, you know?
Yeah. So feel pretty good about that. That was all. And of course I played a bunch of Fallout and,
bet you did.
That's good. I think I'm winding down on that. I finished the main story and now I'm kind of cleaning up side stuff. And probably got about 8 or 10 hours left in that, and then I'll be done.
Cool. Did you hear about the guy who went the Kilgrave method with it?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. At first, I was like, how did you finish it? Because the idea is the guy finished the game with zero kills, like completely zero down the line. He didn't even kill a rad roach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how do you... That's not possible. But so he got kills, but he didn't acquire them.
Right.
He basically would make people turn hostile against other people, which I think is so awesome.
That's super cool. Yeah.
So...
Yeah, so that's cool. And played a lot more of Cities Skylines, which is that SimCity game. So I played a bunch more of that. And I had a really good city going. Really good city going. And then I was running low on power, and I thought, well, you know, I'm trying to use renewable energy resources as much as possible. So I built a dam, and dam generate electricity, of course. And what I didn't realize though is that the dam over the river, it blocked all the water from flowing through my city. So all of my water intake stations, basically the river drained and was dry. And there was no water getting to the citizens. And then all of the sewage dumping places that were previously dumping in the river and was getting washed away then filled up the riverbed. And then my water intake started pumping raw sewage into the city. And it was like flipping a switch, and there were icons popping up all over the city of you know, like 300,000 people in the city. Icons popping up all over the city of people who were sick.
Right.
And then quickly those all turned to skull and crossbones. And then a lot of buildings started getting abandoned.
Oh, wow.
And I immediately demolished the dam.
But it was too late.
And the reflowing water could not move fast enough to clean out the death and destruction. So that was probably a good 8 hours of gameplay just down the tubes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's no like save, undo.
I could have, but it's also... it was kind of more fun to start over than trying to recover
that
from that.
Kind of awesome, right?
Yeah. And when I gave up, my population had dropped from, it was something like 200,000 down to 14,000 people.
Wow. Yeah. So imagine that event like in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty terrible.
Yeah. So, just thinking like city of 300,000 people died because they weren't smart enough to not drink poop water.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Because that's what happened. Like,
right.
Like they turned on their faucets and crap came out and they were like, I guess we'll drink this.
And I didn't even realize what the problem was because I just started seeing all these little sick icons pop. I'm like, oh, that's weird. I guess I need more hospitals. And I built 2 more hospitals. Didn't help.
Oh, that's funny.
Didn't help.
That is funny.
Whoops.
So, yeah. All right. So, hey, topic for tonight here.
Sure.
Let's talk about I wanted to talk about stealing from other games.
Okay.
Which isn't actually stealing, to be clear. When we started out as game designers, at least I felt this way, and I think you kind of did too. The idea of taking mechanics from other games, published or not, you know, games we knew people that designed or games that each other we worked on, or just published games that were well known. At first, I thought you couldn't use a mechanic from one of those games. And if you did, people would be like, oh, plagiarism, you stole this mechanic. Until you start to realize that most mechanics are not new and the mechanics are everywhere and a lot of mechanics are reused. And even ones you're like, oh, that's really interesting, still reused. You know, when you think about the fact that deck building didn't exist until I think Eminent Domain came out. And then obviously Dominion is what made it super popular. But Eminent Domain obviously was kind of the first. I believe that was.
That sounds right.
I think Eminent Domain was first.
A game historian. So, yeah. But yeah. So that sounds right.
Anyway, so, you know, I mean, mechanics are repurposed all the time. So it's not actually stealing from games. It's repurposing mechanics from games and new combinations. And hopefully, if you take a mechanic from a game, you're trying to do it in a new way, right?
Yeah.
Trying to shine a new light on it simply because there's no reason to reinvent the wheel, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to take a mechanic from someone else and then turn it into your own thing, you know, make it like you in your style.
Yeah.
So there's our topic. I think we're good. I feel like that's it at all.
Well,
I kind of do feel like it's cleared it up.
It's pretty good.
So, let's talk a little bit about that, though. I think we've all purposely borrowed from other games where you've said, I really like this mechanic from this game.
Yeah.
The only time I feel weird about it now is if it's an unpublished game that a friend designed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, that's a cool mechanic. Like, Josh Mills, for instance, has a mechanic in his milk game, his milkman game, where if you get, it's a dice game, you roll, you get spilt milk, right? And that sucks. One spilt milk, it sucks. But if you get two, it's a wild, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really smart. It's a really smart idea. But the game's not published yet, right? So like, I don't want to be out there with, because I'm working on this dice game, right? And I was trying to figure out what to do with the things. And I was like, well, I don't want to just copy that because then like, you know what I mean? It's like, dude's not even getting credit for it when I'm shopping it around. Like,
yeah.
If somebody says, oh, where'd you come up with that? I can't say, oh, well, this Milkman game that's out there. And they're like, oh, that's really cool. It's like, hey, well, I know this guy, his game's not published yet. So I stole it from him. but I used that as a jumping off point to make it my own. Mm-hmm. I was like, how could I utilize something like that? So in my Shipwreck Shore game, if you get more than one sea monster on your turn, you can steal from someone else.
Yeah.
So it's not wild. That is a specific action. Basically, the sea monster is in their way and you're able to get over there and grab something of theirs. And I think so there is an instance of saying, I really respect that mechanic. How can I use something like it, but make it my own? Mm-hmm. So that's really good.
Yeah. The other thing I think, though, that's important to remember is that in the best games, the whole game is not one mechanic.
Correct.
You know? Games can use mechanics in cool ways and innovative ways and fresh ways. And they can combine different mechanics together in cool ways.
Right.
But the really great games out there do not just hinge completely on one thing. Now, I mean, you could argue that Dominion does, but I think deck building is the core focus of that game. But really what makes that game cool is the way all the different cards interact with each other.
Yes.
And that's absolutely where the real work of the design and the development went into that game, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
as an easy example.
Right. If it was just another deck building game that was exactly the same as all the others, at that point there weren't many, but sure. You know, that's a really good example of taking that and twisting it is Flip City, right? Flip City is a smaller deck building game. But what's so cool about that is you buy a card and then you can upgrade your card by flipping it. Mm-hmm. So like you've got your deck is one way. And when I've got a card that's not great, I can pay money and flip that card over. Mm-hmm. So now I have the opposite side, which is an upgraded version of that card.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a cool way that it said, here's what Dominion's doing. How could I do that with less cards in an interesting way? So basically every card in that game has two sides. So you've doubled the amount of card types in your game,
mm-hmm.
but have less cards in the game. So it makes it more portable. It fits in the small size box, kind of like an Eggs and Empires size.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. Like that's to me is a great example of cool thing. Gonna make it my own.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And I think we've both tried that with varying degrees of success from time to time, right? Like,
oh yeah.
In my case, Frankenstein's Legacy. You know, I tried to come up with my own approach to a deck builder, and I tried to combine some Dominion ideas also with set collection stuff and some dice rolling, and
mm-hmm.
and it didn't really work out in the end. But I learned a lot from that. You know, and in hindsight, I probably would not lean so heavily on the deck building. I think if I were going to come back to that a second time.
Well, and that's like when I was working on my, I can't remember what it's called now, but it was the game where there was the first Mac building game I tried to make, and it was a deck builder.
Yeah.
But the idea was on your turn, you were trying to build a map, right? Yeah.
Gosh, what was that called?
I don't remember.
I think it had several names.
Explorers, I think at one point it was called. Yeah, but the idea was, you were trying to build up a map, mm-hmm. and then search the map and then leave one card to be the starting point of your next map and then go from there. Mm-hmm. So, so that's, you know, and that didn't work out mm-hmm. for me. I think the game would have worked out. I think I just poorly executed it. It's still a design I would like to get back to at some point mm-hmm. to do something with deck building / map making. Because I think it's a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no idea how to do it. So,
yeah.
So, let's think about, let's think about how we could take a game where we, a popular game where we would take a mechanic from it and try and think of it in a very different way.
Okay.
Okay. So give me a popular game.
Popular game
that you know I've played.
That
at least I've played.
Yeah. That's an important caveat there. Well, you've got a big thumbs up, happy time. For this Walk on Fire game. So let's say flipping cards.
Flipping cards, all right. So the idea that you flip cards while playing, right, is what you're
mm-hmm.
saying?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a different way you could use that. Let's say that you're trying to make a map. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All the cards are map cards, right? And they're two-sided. So there's a map on both sides, right?
Okay.
So think of like the game Suro, and you're trying to make a map with tiles.
Mm-hmm.
So cross those two, right? So you, you've got your cards all laid out on one face up with maps. And maybe it's like a dungeon, right? So it's got a lot of hard corners and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but the other side is doors, right? The other side is like hallways and doors, right? So the back side is rooms and then in the front side is hallways and doors. And your goal is to get your character, like to drop your character on a spot and then move them through, almost like that game Labyrinth I was telling you about, where you shuffle the tiles back and forth. So, so you've got the cards there. You go in with your like pickaxe. We'll say that the card is a pickaxe instead of a spatula, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you flip the cards to try and line up so that you can move through with these hallways and doors to get to rooms that have treasures in them and stuff. So you try to move to get through rooms to find treasures and such.
Okay.
And maybe the treasures are just standard and there's a treasure draw deck then that you can pull from. And that is items and money and stuff. So it could be points for the end of the game or it could be items that help you move stuff around and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Actually, cool. I feel good about that idea.
Yeah, that's all right.
Kind of cool.
So. I haven't played Walk on Fire, so I'm not sure how different that is, but it sounds good.
Well, I mean, that's about making stir fry. So with Walk on Fire, you've got the pool in the middle. It's all face down and the cards are one-sided.
Okay.
So the backs are all up as you're doing that. And you flip the cards and then you do that twice And then you get to pick two ingredients. Now, you may have extra, as the game wears on, you'll have more and more options.
Okay.
But at first, you have just a couple options based on what you flip, right? Mm-hmm. And then as the game keeps moving, you'll keep getting more options. And certain cards you have to pick up when you see them, right?
Okay.
So some of the cards could be monsters, right? So like if a monster card flips up, you have to fight the monster, you know? So
sure.
Okay. It's different enough that I it wouldn't be like that. If anything, somebody could say it was more like Sorrow because you were trying to make a map to get through the thing, right? Okay. So,
right.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of like that. There you go. Let me think of a game you like, and we're trying to do the same thing.
Here. Okay.
All right. A game that Rob really likes with a unique mechanic that he could steal for his own game.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I literally have no idea. I'm like looking at my games over here. Well, that was just that Walk on Fire was a really good example because it's got a very unique core mechanic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not. I literally can't think of anything. Okay. My mind is blank. So, hey, I did it. Yay.
Free pass for me.
I was good enough to think of a game, but not think of one for Rob.
Okay. That's all right.
So, you know.
Okay. So yeah, don't be afraid to take mechanics as inspiration. I mean, obviously, we're always going to take inspiration from other games. Don't be afraid to take mechanics as a part of that inspiration. And it's okay to do that as long as you're trying to bring something new, something fresh, something, right. You're trying to bring your own flavor to that idea.
Yep. I mean, do not do the same thing they did. Cause that's stealing.
That's stealing. Right.
And also boring because they already did it.
Yeah. Right. And if it's already a published game, then, you know, what do you think you're doing?
Oh, you know, what's a really inventive mechanic. You don't have to do anything with this, but one of my favorite mechanics of this year that we found is the money mechanic in Area 51.
Area 51?
Warehouse 51.
Warehouse 51.
Where I buy something and that means I have to pay the guy on my left.
Yeah.
And it makes this really weird economy that sometimes is broken and sometimes works really well. But when it's broken, it's still cool because it's still pushing the game. And so yeah, that's a really good one. And that's a mechanic that I haven't seen like anything else in any other game. So that to me is a new mechanic. Now, I can be wrong. The other thing to remember is too, that even if you're not actively borrowing mechanics from other games, you're probably borrowing mechanics from other games. You just don't know it.
Yeah.
You know how many times I've been like told somebody about a game, like I'll talk to Kucharski or something like, oh, I got this game, blah, blah, blah. You know? And he's like, oh, that's like such and such. And I'm like, oh
yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things that I do sometimes is that I look at games that I don't like or that I don't understand, and I look at the mechanics in them, and I say, let me try and use this so I can figure it out, and hopefully I will at least learn something by trying to use that mechanic.
You've done that with themes, too. You're like, zombies, I don't like them. I'm going to make a zombie game that's not like that.
Yeah, and I've tried that a few times, it's a fun experiment. It's a fun challenge.
It is, right? It is for sure.
Right. Actually, our buddy Len turned me on to Rondelles. And now I really want to think about Rondelle and something.
You just want to jazz it up with a Rondelle for every game you do.
Yeah, every single
game. Explain how a Rondelle works.
So I guess there are different ways to approach it. See, I always thought of a Rondelle as being like a spinner, or it wouldn't be a spinner, excuse me. It'd be like two discs of paper that slide over each other, and the one on the bottom has markings on it, and the one on top has holes in it or something. Right. And depending on where you position that, the hole reveals different answers, like a decoder ring kind of thing.
Right.
But that's not at all what a rondelle typically is used for. Rondelle is really just a way to track an organized series of actions in the cases that I've looked at. And let's say you have a wheel of seven actions. Mm-hmm. Number one through seven. And if you are on this turn, you're going to be using action three. On your next turn, you can use action two or action four for free. You can reuse action three and you actually get one gold back or something, right?
Because
if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're getting good at it and you're earning money from that. You can change to a nearby action for free, but the farther around the rondelle you go to do a different action, the more it costs you.
Right.
Yeah, which is cool. And then you can also put things in there where nobody can be using the same action in the same round or something. And so it kind of making you think about, in a way, it's almost like action programming. So you think about where you are and where you want to be in two turns or three turns or four turns. And what if you're playing it well, you want to think about what it's going to cost you to get there. And what you have to do to get to that action when you want it, that to use that action.
So you don't short yourself, basically, right?
Exactly, right. Yeah, so I think it's a really, really cool idea. I'm sure that's an oversimplification of how to use a rondelle, but that's my understanding so far, and it's something I want to play with and try and explore.
That's cool.
Yeah. Len and I have been talking about doing that a little bit in Soda Kings. That's one of the ideas that he's bounced at
me. I think that would be really cool.
So, yeah. So, again, Len, I promise I'll get back to that at some point. It's just been, you know, crazy end of the year stuff.
It's not what you're doing for Unpub, so.
Yeah, right. So, you've got to. Lower stakes for me right now. So, but anyway. Right.
I was getting our questions ready here, but then I realized that we have to pitch a game.
Yeah, we have to pitch a game. So, it's my turn, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so we don't have anything. I don't have anything to pitch, and you didn't really have anything that was super solid.
I have something that's a little
for next week.
But.
So we thought it would be fun to do a pitch challenge, and we went back and forth a little bit and argued about what our challenge should be.
I had the best idea, but you didn't like it.
It was a dumb idea. So
it was really good.
It was a terrible idea.
You said, and I quote, "I like that idea, but it's just too hard."
All right, well, hard, difficult, whatever. So I, one of the things that I enjoy doing if I'm you know, writing card text, or thinking about a fiction for the background of things, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I like to go to random name generators on the internet and just and have it just kind of come up with random, weird, bizarre stuff. And one of my favorites is a website called SeventhSanctum.com.
SeventhSanctum.com.
And it's cool. And it's just, they have name generators for all kinds of bizarre things. And it, I mean, we're talking character name generators, location names, ship names, all kinds of bizarre stuff. The best thing is at the top of their webpage, there's a link that just says random. Okay. And you click that, and it will give you random, I don't know if it's 10 or 20 results from one specific category in their entire database. And you never know what's going to pop up. And so I thought it would be cool to go there, and Jason, for me, can click that random button and then pick one thing from those results.
Okay.
And that will be the title of a game that I have to pitch tonight.
Sounds good.
Okay. So you ready?
Yep.
What you got?
Oh, I actually have to go there?
Yeah. Well,
sorry. I thought you
I've
were
got it queued up on my phone if you would rather use mine.
No, that's... Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Because it's going to take forever for me to find it.
All right, so it's right there. So just tap random.
Okay.
And I'll give you a minute to look through the list of whatever it pops up.
So what it's given me here, so that the is it's given me dragon names.
Dragon names. That's a category. Okay.
That
dragon
the category
names.
Is dragon names.
Okay.
But I would challenge you not to use them as a dragon name.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. So we're not tied to the. To that as a guiding force for the game design. This is only name inspiration.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, man. This is just, these names are just so good. A couple of them would be awkward if I gave them to you. So I'm not going to do that.
All right.
The problem is as I'm looking, I'm like suddenly thinking of like, oh, I would do this. I would do that. But I don't want to do that because, you know, this is your thing.
It's mine. You get to do it next.
I do. So, yeah, so I've got... There's one I like. You know what? I'm just going to give you this one because this is the weirdest one.
Okay. That's good.
Of all of them. Gosh, there's two that are really weird. I'm having a hard time deciding which one. One of them I know will be easier... for you to think of a game, but it'll probably be funnier.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that one.
All right.
So the one I didn't give you, can I just say what that is?
Yeah.
Is Venom Knower the Toxic.
Venom Knower?
The Toxic.
The Toxic. As in Venom, K-N-O-W-E-R.
Yeah.
Venom Knower the toxic.
There's no game there, so.
No, but it's a really funny name.
But this is a really good one.
Okay.
Grandfather Battle Strike.
Grandfather Battle Strike.
Just so you know, I'm not making that up. It's right
there. And it's specifically Grandfather Battlestrike the Librarian. He is an ancient dragon. He has green scales and exceptionally large eyes. His breath is a bolt of electricity. He has a love of violence. His language skills are broad and deep. He lives in a desert oasis. His horde is big. Wow. Okay, Grandfather Battlestrike.
So, Avi, you're not tied to the dragon portion. Though. You can use that however you want to.
Okay.
You could use a dragon if you want to, but you don't have to.
Grandfather Battlestrike. So, Grandfather Battle Strike. Grandfather Battle Strike. Boy, that's good. That's good. Battle Strike.
That's right.
So, Battle Strike. I think this is a role-playing game.
Okay.
This is a role-playing game. This is a role playing game. Let's see. Maybe it's not a role playing game. I'm trying to key into the story around.
So there's a grid.
Yeah.
It's a hex grid.
Right.
Just kidding.
I'm trying to key into the theme for Grandfather Battlestrike.
Feel the theme, let it flow through you.
Yeah. So Grandfather Battlestrike. I think this is definitely a role playing game. The players, and this is a module specifically for I think this is a module for Fractured Arms, honestly.
For your game Fractured Arms.
Yeah, I think this is a module, because Grandfather Battlestrike is an ancient battle axe.
Okay.
That has reached some kind of higher level of existence. And the Grandfather Battlestrike is a powerful entity that has been enshrined. It's kind of like a sword in the stone kind of thing. It's been enshrined inside a great crystal vault.
Wow.
And the first part of the adventure is that all the player characters who are, you know, remember in Fractured Arms, the players are playing as sentient weapons that are kind of half controlling the warriors who carry them. And so the Grandfather Battlestrike is an ancient, powerful entity that's bound to this ancient battle axe, which is famous for slaying innumerable dragons and great sorcerers, and really was carried. It's legendary. Most people think it is truly a legend, but it's calling to the adventurers in this module, and the adventurers the adventuring weapons take their warriors in the first part of the story to the crystal tomb where it's trapped, and it sends them on a grand adventure to try and he seeks to be free, frankly.
Why would he not?
So he seeks to be free because he's tired of his slumber and he wants to be back out in the world and be I don't want to say conquer the world, you know, because he's not an evil Grandfather Battlestrike.
What if they get there? Because they're trying to, like,
unleash him. Yeah. So he sends them on a quest because Grandfather Battlestrike has felt the power of another great sorcerer in the world.
Is he an axe? Is he a big axe?
He's a big battle axe, yeah. Yeah, he's a big battle axe. And he knows that the sorcerer has a totem. And actually, the power of the sorcerer comes from the totem, which is also a sentient, because all magic in this world comes from sentient spirits tied to physical objects.
Right.
Right. And so he knows that the power within that totem, if it is connected to the pommel of his handle, it'll be powerful enough. He can combine with that, and he can be freed from the crystal prison that he's stuck in. The adventurers they go off and they try it and they find the sorcerer. Of course, when they get to the sorcerer, they learn out that the sorcerer and his totem maybe they've gotten false information from Grandfather Battlestrike.
Right.
Now the way that goes depends on how you play the game, right?
Right.
But it introduces some new mechanics to Fractured Arms also.
Oh.
And it introduces that mechanic of binding two items together into one weapon, right? And so in the process, the other players can have the opportunity to come across smaller, less powerful totems, which they can use basically to socket into their existing weapons, right?
Yeah,
into what they are, and they can gain new aspects to their characters, to their souls that are bound to these weapons, right?
Right,
right. By doing so, it gives them abilities to have other effects on the humans in the world, humans and creatures that wield them in the world. So mechanically, it's been a while since I talked about the mechanics of Fractured Arms. I think everything was driven from shards of personality.
Yeah, I think so.
And so it adds a new shard to your character sheet when you socket something in. And you can have up to 7 new shards, though each one is more difficult to socket in.
Right.
And at any rate,
there seems to be some risk too of altering your personality irrevocably, right?
Oh, absolutely, right. So. And that adds the role playing challenge to it as well. You know, part of the fun of as your characters as your weapon's personality is affected by these other beings, the other spirit totem spirits that are that enter into your own the soul of your weapon, it might affect how you role play your character.
Right.
Frankly,
I love to see a character like play a character in that game that where they did that and then the shards separated again, not physically but mentally. So you basically have split personalities of your shards, right? Like, so one could be evil, one could be good, you know, so like this kind of internal struggle you're having with pieces of the, you know.
Oops, I just bumped the table. Yeah.
You're trying not to hit the table.
Right, okay? I'm trying not to. You're right. And that actually could easily branch off into a second module or a follow-up adventure.
Kind of,
you know? I could even see potentially having twin weapons, like two players to play twin weapons that where they have been, they have been cleaved in that way, so to speak.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be super
cool. It could be like this mythical axe. Well, you have Grandfather Battle Axe. That's like a double axe. Mm-hmm. Like, picture like a double lightsaber, but axes, because that's super stupid. But then somebody broke them in half, because that makes way more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But they split them right down the middle. Voltron together or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Grandfather Battle Axe.
That's not bad, man. That's not bad.
Is the newest module for Fractured Arms, which is the role-playing game where you play... where your main character is actually a sentient weapon. And just to remind the builders out there, if you haven't listened to that pitch, that was a long time ago.
A very long time ago. But it's still one of my favorite ideas you've had. I still really wish that you would make that game.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where, how.
I mean, it's not really your thing either.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
Playing stuff, but.
But so your main character is the weapon, and you have, every player has a secondary character, and your secondary character, you're playing actually as the human who is wielding one of your teammates' weapons, you know. So you know, if there's three people in the party, then you know, you're playing the character of the person on your left. And so in some cases you're rolling together to defeat enemies. In other cases you're rolling against each other because you have competing agendas. But the primary character is the weapon, because theoretically, if your human character, or if your living sub character, for lack of a better term, you know, if they die or killed in battle, someone else could pick you up.
Yep.
And it could keep on going. And so you might churn through several humans that actually wield you over the course of an adventure.
Right. I like that idea.
Yeah. So that's cool. A little bit different approach to that.
Well done. Well done. I like that.
Grandfather Battle Axe.
Hey, we have a comment.
Nailed it.
We have a comment.
Okay. Is this a Twitter question?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's from Matthew, from Mr. Matthew, at Mr. Matthew on Twitter.
Yeah.
He says, have you done an episode on PNPs and sourcing online, not in-person playtesting? Would love to hear about that.
And I think we had a follow-up comment.
Comment from Robin David_Dice was, agreed. This can be so difficult. BGG playtesters needed forum is okay, if unreliable.
Yeah, boy, I think that's an understatement too, right? yeah, man, finding people to do your PNP, that really is a challenge. Like, we've been doing this for a while now, right? And I've put out 4 or 5 different PNPs since we've been doing this. And and at most I had maybe 3 people try one of them, that I know of, at least. That,
right.
You know, only 3 people have ever given me feedback on these things.
Yeah. And one of the things that I had heard was that's really good about this is to try and pick 5 people that you want to play your PMP and give it to them and them only.
Mm-hmm.
And then harass them about it. You know, just make sure that you're keeping them on task. Okay, you said you were going to try this. Can you report on this? Can I ask you some questions?
Yeah.
Rather than just throwing it out there, because you throw it out there and people are like, I tried that. It was all right. I'm not going to give him feedback. Or like, gosh, the game would be way better if he did this, but I don't feel like giving feedback.
Yeah.
So, and that sucks because, hey, you know, designers need feedback.
Right.
Shocker.
Yeah. That's a real challenge. And, you know, in that blind playtesting is so helpful. It's so helpful.
Yeah.
You know, and it's some of the best feedback you can get coming from, I mean, on a most basic level, it tells you how well your rules are written, right? You know, but in a lot of cases, it's just so important. I mean, I'm not even really sure what I'll say about it, but it's a real struggle. You know, it's a real struggle. And you're right.
Indeed it is.
Going on the forum in BGG, it's a crapshoot. I mean, you could get real lucky and get some great people who give you awesome feedback and aren't afraid of cutting out a bunch of cards, and, you know.
Right.
But
the other thing I've tried is I'll just make a simple prototype of my game and then mail it to people.
Yeah.
And say, listen, I want this back, jerk. So, and they're usually pretty good about giving it back. You want to mail it to people you trust, obviously.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, no, that's a challenge. I can suggest try starting a podcast and growing your listener base. And then after 3 years of doing it, maybe three people will be interested.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we have people that like, we don't ask consistently, but I can think of at least 5 to 10 people from our podcast. If we said, hey, mm-hmm. I need help with this game, would you help me with this game? They would say yes.
Yeah.
So absolutely, they would say yes.
Yeah.
We just don't ask that often.
Right.
Because we usually like to do our own playtesting until we're ready for blind playtesting.
Yeah, and I don't want to waste a lot of people's time with something right. if it's total garbage. Right. Like, I've made that mistake in the past. Back when Neil was so kind enough to play my tower building game so early on, and he didn't even have to play it. He just looked at it and read the rules and ran some numbers and said, dude, this is super broken. And he was totally right.
Neil does.
Yeah.
Also, your rules are stupid. Let me rewrite them for you.
Yeah, right. He's good at that too.
He's nice about it, but
yeah. And ever since then, I've felt a little bad giving people PNPs that are too
new. Yeah.
Too new.
And that's one of the biggest things we get asked for. Like, hey, I'll test your PNP for this. And putting together PNP can be tough. Like
putting it together for me to print out on my own at home.
Yeah,
whatever.
Super easy.
Yeah. But putting it together in a format where anybody can just know what to do and how to assemble it. That's a little tougher.
Right.
That's a little tougher.
So cool.
Yeah, so if any builders out there have any recommendations on good ways to approach that and good ways to try and reach out to playtesters to try PNP, we would love to hear that.
Love it.
I would say you cannot underestimate the value of a well put together PNP, you know?
It's true. And even if you could just throw some Google artwork on there, it really makes the game feel more fun.
It helps.
Even if it's just crappy Google art, it really makes the game feel
more
fun.
It helps. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's a good way to approach it. Do we have anything else?
I think that's all we got.
Okay. All right. Well, then that's the end of another exciting episode of Building the Game, a documentary podcast.
Really want a quick note as you go into the stuff. We're talking about buying our games. Water Balloon Washout, still the deal of the century going on. Oh. 2 copies for $20 and free shipping. So anyways, buy Finisher, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game of the Rubble Boom Academy for Buzzbase Baking, and your turn. All right.
Okay. Yeah, those are on thegamecrafter.com. You can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave comments on our episodes and our show notes at buildinggamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at J-A Slingerlin, and I am at poorly_design. Like us on Facebook. 5-star reviews on iTunes. Hey, is Android Play Store up yet?
No, Google Play.
Still?
No.
No, man.
I think it's happening after the first of the year.
Okay.
I know it's not after the first year, so maybe it is up yet, but right. I'm confident when it's up, we'll suddenly be like, whoa, spike in downloads.
Yeah, so look for us on there when that's available. We're also on Stitcher, of course.
It's hoping to be before the end of the year. Give us a nice, huge boost at the end of the year. December's a little lower because people got holidays.
People
and stuff
busy. Yeah, it happens. I don't remember what else. So thanks for everybody. Have a great 2016. Happy New Year. We're looking forward to another exciting, fun, super happy time one. So get going.
All right.
See ya. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Can I talk on your lap?
I don't know that you're going to be able to sit on my lap, but you can sit right next to me. I can hold you like this, see?
Turn in the bin with Jason and Rob.
He's got decent levels.
And joke style, please. I said please.
Yeah, you did a good job. Here, I think you can sit up here. There we go. So now we can share a mic. That's perfect.
That's better.
There's the Building the Game, please, with Jason and Rob and Josiah.